Hey guys, with sports betting season in full force with football here, you need a sports book with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sports book industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BETUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 1-800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. You receive 125% sign-up bonus by using bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses. Also, BetUS is known among America's favorite sportsbook for lots of reasons. Bet on team and player props, loads of NFL futures, UFC matches, PGA golf, live betting on most sports. The online casino has hundreds of games. The Racebooks has all the horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable. Follow my lead and get your phone, online, and sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Any recipe we give for giant upset always includes one specific scenario, and that is bad news for the Vols tomorrow. It is the Chuck Oliver Show live from Knoxville. I am in town, number one Georgia Bulldogs in Neyland tomorrow, taking on Tennessee. And when I say there's any recipe, any math equation, this plus this plus this plus this, anytime we talk about that and we're trying to give the recipe for the giant upset, and folks, that's capital G, capital U, okay? That's a different category. If you're a 4.5-point favorite and you lose, that's not a giant upset. That's not even really an upset. Do you know what that is? The game was at your stadium, not theirs. Now, giant upset, capital G, capital U, like where you draw a line underneath it and you start coming up with a dissertation. Anytime we have a scenario like that, such as when you're looking at tomorrow's Georgia-Tennessee game, and you look at any way that Tennessee can wind up getting that dub, do you know what always is included? Special teams breakdown. Now, that is in addition to, because there's somebody out there listening and said turnovers or penalties or, I don't know, injuries, other factors, something, whatever. Maybe your head coach gets brain freeze. But included in every one of these is always special teams breakdown. Now, turnovers, that could happen tomorrow. Georgia turns the ball over some. Penalties, sure, that could happen. The reason this is bad news for the Vols is when I say special teams breakdown, remember, folks, we're not talking about a 4.5-point dog coming through on a Saturday afternoon. I'm talking about Tennessee having to overcome being like a 4-touchdown underdog. So when special teams doesn't even go far enough when you're talking giant upset. It has to be special team, not win special teams breakdown, special team disaster. And UGA is actually dealing that out as yet another advantage for the Dogs. Every time you give me this recipe, you include special teams breakdown, and it's actually another huge advantage in Georgia's column. A punt return. What we're talking about, special teams breakdown, punt return, a long field goal, getting a block maybe. All of that is supposed to be on the board for the underdog to get his upset. All of those things and more, and scoring on those plays or preventing the opponent from scoring, such as like when three Georgia linemen blocked the same field goal attempt. That's what I'm talking about. Instead of special teams being a crack, instead of special teams tomorrow, it being an opening, an opportunity when you play Georgia, it's just another Everest you got to figure out. Special teams, what do we have? All right, so we have the kicking game. Let's talk about this. Place kicking from field goals to whatever they do on kickoffs, and that's Camarda. Camarda does the kickoffs, right? Yeah. Place kicking with Podlesny, and I'm going to start with that because that's the most efficient area Georgia has on teams. Asked a buddy of mine in Athens, I was like, if Camarda's an A, I think Jake Camarda may be the best punter in America. I'll get to him in a second. If he's an A, I was like, what is Pod? He said, sometimes an A, sometimes a C. Which, you know what that means? Means he's a C. Means it's about what you can count on. So we'll start there. I will next go to the category that's kind of a void, and that's the return game. For most teams now, it's just nobody returns stuff. When it is and Kiaris is healthy, he can do something, and so that's fine. Punting, Camarda, short conversation, A+, best in America in my opinion. He's a punter who's going to get drafted. Then there is PAT, field goal block, punt block, those teams. And Georgia is changing games with their block teams. They have, I know, against Arkansas, had a block punt recovered for a touchdown. Against Missouri, had a block punt that actually went out the back of the end zone. That was 2 points. I get the touchdown. You always want the touchdown on a block. Always give me the score. They got 2 points. Missouri free kick, Georgia, boom, boom, boom. Georgia wound up getting 9 points. So it doesn't change what's right. Get the touchdown. Give me the 7, not the 2. Georgia's like, yeah, it'll take a few minutes, but we'll go ahead and get to 7 as well. The field goal, it was Arkansas, and it was Jordan Davis. I think it was Carter, and I said 3 guys blocked the same field goal. Davis and Carter, I believe it was, actually got a hand on the ball. There was a third guy who couldn't get to it. Like, the third closest player to the kick was another Georgia guy who was like, I can't even get there because they're in my way. Turnovers, that absolutely can happen. It's supposed to be cold tomorrow and catching a cold football or what? It's not easy. But that's for both teams. That's not an ability sort of thing. And Georgia doesn't have a quarterback who's loose with the ball anyway. So turnovers, absolutely, that's something we always talk about, but that's there for both teams, and so that just kind of makes it a void. Special teams, folks, that's where you go when you look for the crack, the maybe, the possibility, the what would it take, how much, how many. And that's just another area for Tennessee to overcome if they're able to get the upset tomorrow, and I don't believe it's going to happen. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk with Bill Bender, right from Sporting News. That's next on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Side, Michigan still got away. They can get to the Big Ten championship game. Gonna have to do something I hadn't done in a minute, and that's beat Ohio State. But that's down the road, folks. Tomorrow they got Penn State, and that's a quality team. It really is. This round robin that I thought would start in the Big Ten actually last weekend. It started like 3 weeks ago when the Big Ten had, I think it was 3 teams in like the top 8 or something, half of the top 10. I said, we're about 2 weeks away from this round robin where all these ranked teams started playing each other, and then teams like Purdue decided to get involved. And so that round robin starting eliminating teams, that happened a little sooner than I was thinking. Michigan and Michigan State obviously was a couple of weeks ago as well. And the Wolverines, they came back last week and opened a can on Indiana. So they're trying to keep their season going along. When it comes to the Big Ten, I got a guy I always go to. Love talking with him. Big Ten, Big 12, anything in college football, really. From the Sporting News, it's Bill Bender. Bill, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you coming on. Let's talk opponent, first of all. What is Penn State as an opponent tomorrow? Because they've taken some body blows.
Well, I mean, they're going to be tough. The 2 top 10 defenses, they're at home. They stop the run well. They've got a good pass defense, and they've lost some close games, and they've played Ohio State tough in the red zone. So Michigan, I mean, that'll be a typical old-school Big Ten headbanger. I think the advantage Michigan does have, if they don't get caught up in the emotion of playing on the road, they've got the better running game, and I think that's going to serve them well tomorrow.
What do you think Harbaugh wants to get done with the passing game with McNamara and such?
I mean, probably the same thing you should have kept doing against Michigan State. You know, you got to trust your quarterback on the road in big spots. I think Cade McNamara hasn't turned the ball over much this year. I think he has like one or two interceptions. It's a big spot for them because they, you know, the committee obviously likes them. The committee wants to put them ahead of Michigan State, even though they shouldn't have. And if Michigan takes care of business here, it stands to reason that they should be 10-1 when the high state rules in Ann Arbor in 2 weeks.
I've always looked at quarterbacks, and when experience and savvy is like at the top of your, you know, your skill set, it's good and bad. And I'm looking at Sean Clifford, you know, like Kenny Pickett last night. Part of his success, he's so dang experienced. He's played so much college football. What do you think Sean Clifford has eventually worked his way into being?
I mean, Sean Clifford's a good player. He's solid. He plays tough. I mean, in last year's game, he made some plays with his legs. He's not a five-star NFL quarterback by any means, but I think he fits what their offense is trying to do. And you know, as far as Big Ten quarterbacks go, I mean, C.J. Stroud, you could say he's the best quarterback, but he has the most to work with. When you're throwing to three or four first-round wide receivers, it's not that hard. I don't want to say it that way. It's just it's a lot easier in terms of putting up numbers and those kind of things.
All right, well, let's talk a little Ohio State. And I put Purdue in there, and I don't know what it is Brohm does. I don't know how they managed to pull this off, but that is just a really tough team that is good enough to scare most teams and actually get the dub on some Saturdays. What about tomorrow in Seabus?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a little bit tougher just because they're in Columbus. Ohio State has an offense that matches up well. I mean, obviously, they've got the big plays. Purdue, you know, the consistency is the thing. Can they stop the run for another week? Can they push Ohio State and give O'Connell enough time to throw inside Ohio State defensive line? I mean, it could be interesting. I still think you know, David Bell's a guy to watch that could put up some big numbers. But if it's a shootout in Columbus, and the weather right now is pretty nice here, that would favor the Buckeyes, no doubt.
I think I know your answer. Can Maryland pretend to play enough defense to kind of make this fun tomorrow?
And they're going to stop the run. I mean, I thought they would hang with Iowa a couple weeks ago, and I thought they'd hang with Penn State last week, but they still lost by two scores. They just don't have – I mean, they can hang with Michigan State, no question, because the talent difference is not – that great. Michigan State's a good team, but do they have a bunch of five-star guys? No. So if Maryland does the right things, they can hang around. And that Michigan State pass defense could, when it's that, it's bad. And if Maryland can exploit that with Talia and make some big plays in the receiving game, they can make it interesting for sure.
If we get in the DeLorean and go forward about three weekends, what is your Big Ten championship game? Is it Ohio State versus someone?
Yeah, it's still Ohio State, Wisconsin. I mean, that's okay. Wisconsin's in position with their wins against Iowa and Purdue, despite a really tough schedule that they've managed. Losses to Michigan, losses to Penn State, losses to Notre Dame. Those aren't bad teams that they lost to. And if they can hang around and win the West, I think that's going to happen. And I still think Ohio State's the best bet to get through Purdue, Michigan State, both at home, and then go to Ann Arbor. And they haven't lost to Michigan since 2011. I know it's got to happen sometime, but I don't know that it'll be this year.
Malusia, and the reason I wanted to ask if it was going to be Wisconsin coming from, you know, your side of the way or your Western division. Malusia out, and that offense has had fits and starts. I think I can be kind and say that. What do you think the Badgers are going to look like these final few Saturdays on offense?
Yeah, they've gotten it rolling a little bit on offense. Now they don't have him, obviously, but you know, backup running back's done well. Quarterback play's improved. Their defense is really good. Tomorrow will be interesting because Northwestern and them have had some close games over the years, at least in the last six. So I think watch that one closely, and we'll see what the Wildcats can do. But, I think Wisconsin's still on schedule to win the Big Ten West once again.
All right, last team I want to ask you about, and just a little bit more of a dive on Ohio State, because it's almost like, you know, we treat college teams the way we treat prospects leading up to the draft. We get all about them, and then as it gets closer to the end of the season, we're like, all right, where are the warts? And so from Ohio State, this wave where everybody started being impressed with them a few weeks ago, the counter bill was, yeah, but they're playing Rutgers and Maryland and Indiana. And even the past couple of weeks is like, well, they played better teams, I guess. Even Nebraska, they're trying to get something going. And they weren't overly impressive. What is your evaluation of Ohio State with three regular season games left?
I mean, really good football team. They've hit some red zone issues and some issues on the offensive line the last couple of weeks. The running game hasn't been as dominant against Big Ten defenses. But they still got the most talent of all the Big Ten teams. And I still think they have an offense that they're not going to beat Georgia. Well, you know, they're one of the offenses I want to see play Georgia. And I'm not talking about a full game. I'm just talking about that unit versus that unit. The three offenses, and we're going to see one. Alabama's going to play Georgia. And then I kind of want to see Oklahoma and Ohio State play Georgia just for the offense-defense effect. And the Buckeyes have that kind of offense. So I think they're going to be fine. They're going to win the Big Ten again. They're going to get in the playoff, and they're going to end up in the 3 or 4 seed.
Well, Bill, always appreciate the insight, man. It's great stuff going on in the Big Ten. Thank you for kind of opening the curtains on it.
No problem. Thanks, Chuck. Take care.
All right. Bill Bender, again, Sporting News. And Ohio State, again, I mentioned this earlier in the week. After the Oregon loss, we all knew. And I did it with glee. I did it with enthusiasm. Ah, you're out. Because a one-loss team with a conference championship, that didn't mean anything to the committee. You can still get in. Your one loss came in week two at home against a team that I was not expecting to win a Power 5 conference championship this year in Oregon. And so I was thinking you lost at home to maybe a three-loss team playing without its best player. All right, Buckeyes, next. And then Tulsa happened, and then Akron, Rutgers, and Maryland happened. And in those games, folks, this is not made up. In those games, those four games, they scored 218 points. Now, Tulsa, Akron, Rutgers, Maryland. Next week, Indiana. Put 54 on them. All right, but they're not. Indiana's not as good as we were expecting, and Maryland doesn't play defense, and every word of it was accurate. But it's about to be a little bit of an uptick. Penn State's coming to town. At Nebraska as well, and there were issues, and it wasn't perfect. But you won both of them. And, again, Nebraska, I know what Nebraska isn't, but they don't get a whole lot of credit for what they are, and they are competent. And certainly at home, it makes it more of a challenge. So Penn State and at Nebraska, okay, we're dialing it up a little bit, and then what happened? Single-digit wins both weeks. It wasn't 59-7 like it was against the Zips. It wasn't 52-13. It wasn't 66-17. It wasn't in Bloomington beating the Hoosiers 54-7. It was 33-24 at home against a Penn State team that had lost, I want to say, two of its previous three. Don't have it. I could click my computer twice and see it. Not important. I think they had lost twice in 3 weeks. And then at Nebraska, 26-17. They're going to get tested tomorrow. Now, Bill made a comment I absolutely agree with, that it's going to be tough for Purdue to continue this week to week because they simply don't have the depth. And that will catch up with a team at some point, and it seems to catch up more when teams are in November in CBUS. So that's what we're looking at. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back with more of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
Let's get a look at some of those pro and college lines for the week, brought to you by BetUS. Hi, I'm Dan Matthews, and let's take a look at those odds. Let's start with Georgia at Tennessee for a mid-afternoon tilt on Saturday. Bulldogs, a 20-point favorite. Over-under is 56. Texas A&M, given 2.5 at Ole Miss. Aggies are minus 135 money line. Rebels are plus 115. Over-under is 57. Oklahoma, a 5.5-point favorite at Baylor. Sooners are minus 220 money line. Bears are plus 180. Over-under is 62. Ohio State, a home favorite against Purdue. Buckeyes are given 21 to the Boilermakers. The over-under, 62 and a hook. Let's go to the pros. Cleveland at New England on Sunday. Pats are a 2.5-point favorite. New England minus 140 on the money line. Brownies plus 120. Over-under is 45.5. Falcons, a 10-point underdog against the Cowboys in North Texas. Dallas minus 410 on the money line. Atlanta is 330. Over-under is 55. Saints are at the Titans. Tennessee giving 3. The Titans are minus 145 money line. New Orleans is plus 125. Over-under is 44 and a hook. Sunday night football in Las Vegas. Chiefs at the Raiders. Kansas City favored by 2.5. They are minus 140 money line. Las Vegas is 120. Over-under is 52. How about a chance for you to make some money? We got a couple of really good promo codes for you. How about promo code SST125? With this promo code, BetUS giving you 125% sign-up bonus, for example. That first deposit is $100. You're getting an extra $125 using cryptocurrency. How about the promo code SST200? When you do this, you get 200% of a sign-up bonus on crypto deposits. So that first crypto deposit is $100. You're getting an extra $200 heading back your way. That's a look at the odds brought to you by BetUS, America's favorite sports book for over 25 years.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states now, 55 sticks. Loudoun, Tennessee, sup? Our latest affiliate, glad they're in as well, especially ahead of where we are right now, Knoxville, Tennessee. We're at the Hooters just outside Knoxville. On site for tomorrow's Tennessee Georgia game, and I am blessed to be joined by a guy. I'm going to call him friend of the show, friend of mine. We have him on regularly when it's time to talk Vols. He is the captain. He's the host of the Swain event, the SwainEventPlus.com. You can go to SwainEvent.com as well. It is Jason Swain, former Tennessee receiver. How you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm great. How are you guys? I got a nice setup out here.
Yeah, I appreciate you making time to come out and be on site with us. Let's talk a little Vols Dogs tomorrow, and this will obviously be the best offense Georgia has faced this season, but it's not quite that easy. Just talk about the matchup with Josh Heupel and Hendon Hooker and all.
Yeah, I mean, last time Tennessee played a team with the talent that Georgia has was Alabama. And Tennessee hung tough, and an interception turned the game around, and Alabama was able to pull away. But Tennessee is working with 70 scholarships now. It was 71 before the transfer move of Harrison Bailey. So that was something that everyone knew going into the season. This defense has been kind of playing outside of the bodies, it seems like. The offense with Hendon Hooker making the change from Joe Milton to Hendon. You know, you see how he's played, and he's played like a Heisman Trophy type of candidate. But this team is lacking some talent, is lacking depth, and this coaching staff is getting more out of less right now. And it worked last week against Kentucky. Can it work again against a team that obviously is the best team in college football?
Now, obviously, you've watched every snap they played this year. I've been fascinated by it because, you know, we talked that phrase, Jason, let's spread them out. Ain't nobody spread them out like Tennessee. I mean, like outside the numbers. You'd be holding hands with a coach.
Yeah.
You're so wide. And then you create a light box. And when you're looking at a six-man box, I mean, you almost have to run, especially if you got the man advantage with Hooker. That's the idea. Then Jalen Carter happens. Then Devonta Wyatt happens. Talk about that offensive line and the ability once they're spread out. You still got to win your individual battle.
No, absolutely. That's what the game of football is all about, right? It's about beating the guy in front of you. And, you know, you mentioned the wide splits on the outside. You know, if you're not careful and you blink, those receivers will be behind you because you're not used to seeing that type of a split. So you better be keyed in with your eyes at all times. Josh Heupel has been really good at finding, you know, little nuances to be able to take advantage of. Obviously, this Georgia team presents different challenges, but it's about winning up front. And I think the misconception is when you play a team like Tennessee and Josh Heupel is that they want to throw the ball over and over and over, and spread sometimes means finesse, and that's not the case. These guys want to run the football.
Ain't nothing finesse about Tyon Evans.
No, ain't nothing finesse about, you know, running the football the way Tennessee has been able to. We've had injuries, though, man. Yeah. You've had injuries with, you know, Cade Mays. You've had injuries with Cooper Mays there in the middle, and you've had to rotate guys in and out, guys that were former walk-on. So depth is a concern, but, man, what a challenge it is going to be for this offensive line, because defensive front from Georgia is no joke.
I mentioned Tyon Evans. Go through the health of the running backs, right? Because Evans has missed some time. Is he 100% now?
No, he's not. He's not. And Evans, Jabari Small, those guys did not finish the game against Kentucky. And so you saw Wright in there getting some carries there in, you know, third, fourth quarter, doing a really good job. I mean, there was times this season where Marcus Pierce, Tennessee's walk-on running back, was getting reps. So that's just where Tennessee is right now, but you hope Jabari Small, case he's able to battle as long as possible.
Continue with Jason Swain, again, former Tennessee receiver. You can listen to him every single day, SwainEvent.com, dealing out Vols talk. And I want to ask you, all right, let's say Jason Swain just got hired as a DC or even a secondary coach, okay? And I've always thought this, and you say, nah, Chuck, that's wrong. I've always thought the best secondary coaches are former receivers, because know the routes and how they're trying to set you up and all that. So say you're coaching secondary for the Vols. For Georgia. Do you have to lock up in man all the way across the field, or when they're spread out that far, is zone the best choice? Because what I'm wondering about is, how can you free somebody up for the box?
I think if you're in man, that means that you're not winning matchups up front like you should. I mean, looking at Georgia's defense in their front, they should be able to go zone and get pressure with your front four. And if that's the case, then Tennessee's going to be in for a long, long day. And that's the question, Chuck. I mean, can Tennessee force Georgia to go to single safety and go man-to-man? And I think if that's the case, I think Tennessee should be confident that they can make some plays on the outside, because they have all season long. Cedric Tillman is one of the best 50-50 ball catchers in the country. You look at Velus Jones, he's quick, he's shifty, he's fast. He working in the slot. And then you got Javonte Payton, who all he does is catch touchdowns. He's had 13 receptions for 6 touchdowns this year. So
that's insane.
That's crazy. But if you could just go zone, cover 2, and get pressure on Tennessee, I mean, it could be a long night for
Light
the Vols.
Light them up after they catch it, all that.
Yeah, because
talk about this. I'm glad you said that, because I used to coach defensive line, and I was like, guys, this ain't football, it's math.
Mm-hmm.
If I can drop 7 into coverage,
yep,
I almost don't care who your 4 receivers are. If I have 7 in coverage, I'm going to win virtually every Saturday.
That's right. It is a numbers game, and that's why you see the splits by Tennessee. They put their receivers out wide, and they just start simply doing math. And, okay, let's see who's in the box. And if it's not a lot in the box, then we'll run it. If there is, we'll throw it. So Georgia is one of those teams, one of the few teams in the country, that they can just get pressure on the quarterback with just 4 or even 3. So Heupel and company need to be very creative in finding ways to get Georgia in single safety.
Wrapping up, Jason Swain again, SwainEvent.com. Flip it around, Tennessee's on defense. Tennessee is last in the Southeastern Conference in time of possession. Now, I don't necessarily care about that.
Yeah.
But that means that, I mean, in a literal sense, Jason, there's no SEC defense that is being asked to defend more often than the Vols. They've got guys, and I was talking about this last week with Banks and Beasley, really productive. And I asked the guys, like, are they making plays? Are they making tackles? He's like, they're making tackles. But that's enough right now, isn't it? I mean, they're not supposed to be first-team All-SEC. That was supposed to be Juwan Mitchell, the kid from Texas.
Yeah, I mean, this the defense we saw against Kentucky is kind of the defense we thought we would see all season long, and they've played above that most of this season. Now, Tennessee at one point was leading the country in tackles for a loss, which is the stat that kind of blows your mind, right? Because if you're just making tackles, then how are you making tackles behind the line of scrimmage if they're not plays?
Just tackles.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, Kentucky game just was not good. That was coming off a bye. And the great thing about a bye is that you get the rest. The bad thing about a bye is that you don't play, and there's a week that go by where you're not tackling. So I thought that showed up in a bad way against Kentucky. Tennessee has to get back to tackling. And if they do that, then, you know, we'll see. Stetson Bennett has been better this year than last year. But if you're going to beat Georgia, you got to get to him and affect him and force him to make mistakes.
You know, every year, I mean, I'm sure you do this. You see a kid, and without even watching the full game, you're like, ball player. You can tell the difference between a guy and ball player.
Exactly.
Alante Taylor, ball player. And I was really gratified to see him go the other way last Saturday against Kentucky, because I have people say, nah, he's okay. I'm like, no, he's better than okay. And he's going to make it in the league just on special teams if that's what he has to do. Talk a little Alante Taylor.
Yeah, man, super confident. He's a leader. You know, listen, you play corner in this league, you're going to get beat. And, you know, he had his moments. He's an aggressive corner that got beat on dope move against Ole Miss. Ole Miss did a really good job hitting him with a slant and go, but he is a good tackler. He's aggressive, and he doesn't mind sticking his head in there, sticking his head in the fan. So, Georgia, to beat Alante, you know, you're going to have to, you know, do some double moves, things like that. But he loves to hit, loves to tackle, and I think he'll help Tennessee there in the running game because Georgia does a great job running the football. But he's one of the leaders on this football team, Chuck.
Last thing I want to ask you about is the fans, the fan base. I remember, and I was talking about this about a month ago for some reason, and after Derek Dooley was fired, I was talking to a buddy of mine. I was like, so administration had enough? And he's like, administration didn't fire him. Fans fired him. He's like, we had 69,000 at Neyland the other day. Where's the fan base now? They got to be just over the moon.
Oh, they're on board with Heupel because, you know, and this is a Southern thing, right? I mean, we respond to good people that – are actually good, you know, their jobs too. You kind of look at the Braves and that run that transpired them winning the World Series and how people love Freddie Freeman, yeah. Right? Because he's a good dude and he so happened to be good. Well, same thing I think for Tennessee fans. You know, Josh Heupel, they can tell that he's genuine. He's a good dude. And you know that by how the players are responding to him and how they're playing. And he's doing a good job coaching too. That's part of it. And I think the fans see that. They are on board with him. And, listen, when you have a coaching search, everybody wants the grand slam hire, the big name. But Josh Heupel wasn't the big name. He was just a good football coach that, when you think about it, more credibility, more of a resume as a head coach coming in since Johnny Majors, winning a championship at Pittsburgh and coming in. So it's been a great fit so far. But Heupel has to recruit, and that's the name of the game. The name of the game in this conference. We'll see if he can do it.
Along those lines, last thing, Walter Nolan going to be in the house tomorrow, is my understanding.
Well, he lives here.
Yeah, big five-star.
Yeah, he lives here in Knoxville, moved from Memphis. I know he committed to Texas A&M last week, but his recruitment it's all over the place, man. We'll see what happens, and let me know when he signs somewhere. That's
there
when
I'll
really be paying attention.
Absolutely. Let me see a signed sheet of paper. Jason, I appreciate your time, man.
Thank you.
All right, Jason Swain, former Tennessee receiver. Again, get him on Twitter, folks, Swain Event, at Swain Event, and then also SwainEvent.com, talking Tennessee every single morning. Follow this man, get that ball's info. We're going to take a break, come back, wrap up Hour 1. Hooters in Knoxville next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
What we're doing here is not for everybody. And there's going to be people that doesn't work for them. And we wish them the best of luck if that's what they decide to do. But ultimately, the people that we have in our locker room are going to be ones that are committed to the cause that we're on, whether that's the culture, the discipline, the commitment that's needed to be special.
Steve Sarkisian, Texas head coach. They are not special. Dan, Texas is not back.
Nope, not even close.
If they like to declare that, but they are not back, they will win tomorrow at DKR Memorial Stadium tomorrow. They host Kansas, and Kansas is as not good as Kansas has been in recent seasons. So they'll get a dub tomorrow, but you don't find out anything about – not when you're a Power 5 team. You don't find out anything about yourself when you play Kansas, not right now. And maybe that'll get turned around. They'll improve, and I hope it does. I like competitive football in November. That's honestly what my goal is. In every division, I want still competitive football. But I was actually mentioning Jason Swain, former Tennessee receiver, hosts his own show every morning, was just here with us. I was talking to him during the break about the Bo Davis audio that we talked about this, I believe, on Wednesday. And I said, I side with Bo Davis. That now, part of it was how real it is to Bo, the defensive line coach. If you didn't see the audio or hear about it, it was after last week's 30-7 they got taken to the woodshed. I mean, they got physically pushed around by Iowa State. And so the Texas Longhorns get on the Texas Longhorns bus to go back to the airport to fly home. And it's party time. It's playing Candy Crush and sending text messages to your girlfriend, and it's laughing, and it's just playing. And now, here's the thing. I don't expect after you lose to Iowa State to have 85 kids fling themselves off the top of the stadium. I don't expect that. It's supposed to affect your mood a little bit. And Bo Davis, the defensive line coach and really good recruiter, he stands up and says, like, I had enough of this. And he goes into it. He says, like, this is a game to y'all. It's not a game. This is the rest of your lives. Do something with yourself. Take pride. He goes through that, all of that. He said, this is not a game. To me, this is my life. He's talking about his existence, his sustenance, his ability to pay bills, because I'd mentioned this earlier, actually when the audio came out, that he was driving a truck. He got canned from Alabama. He's driving a truck. 18 with driving a truck, like where you downshift for like a minute and a half because there's so many gears. And then he got a call from the governor for his professional life. That's exactly what happened. And he's back in the game, and he's not only I'm back coaching. I'm coaching in college, in Division I, in Power 5 at Texas. Ding, 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 ding. Check all those boxes. And he had enough. And Sark's comments there was like, yeah, if you're not on board. Basically, Steve Sarkisian to the media yesterday, what Bo said. That's kind of what it was. Remember third grader? What he said. That's what Steve said. If you're not in, that we will help you find a place that you may fit in, but it will not be here. Like I said, Texas will get the dub tomorrow, and you won't know anything more about your team. But winning in the immediate, I mean, you drop this year's edition of the Texas Longhorns into a fishbowl right now. What's the number one thing beyond any big picture, long range? What do you need right now, Dub? Who are we playing? Oklahoma? Ugh. But you're not playing Oklahoma. Who are we playing? Kansas. Okay. Chuck Oliver Show continues. Dan Matthews being here in just a minute. But tomorrow there is another game from a list in college football that you just don't want to be on. FSU Miami is playing tomorrow. Were you aware of that? Florida State, the FSU Miami game is tomorrow. Previously in your college football life, FSU Miami was one of probably three games that before the season, all right, August, I'm going to ask you, here's a sheet of paper, give me your five, whatever, games that don't involve your school. Where'd you graduate from? Bama. Where'd you graduate from? Clemson, Georgia, whatever. If I said give me three games in college football that don't involve your team that you're going to watch no matter what. What are those three games or five games? Florida State, Miami would have been on everybody's, and it would have been a deficient list if it wasn't. They play tomorrow. There's at least 51% of folks listening right now who just got informed that the game's being played tomorrow. I would say at least 51% of folks, oh, Florida State, Miami's tomorrow? Whereas it used to be August. Where'd you graduate from? Oh, I graduated from Texas. All right, give me three games that you're going to watch not involving Texas. I graduated from Georgia, not involving Georgia, Ohio State. FSU Miami was on it. Michigan, Ohio State really wasn't for me. Georgia, Florida, every year. Florida, Tennessee. Folks, there is a list. List. Oklahoma, Nebraska, because I'm a man of a certain age. But Oklahoma, Nebraska, like day after Thanksgiving, short list every year. You can't watch that game anymore. Florida State, Miami, though, folks, they play every year. And if we DeLorean back to about, oh, Dan, what was the first year of divisions, 05 or 04? whatever it was, they broke them. Thank you. They broke them down in division so that Florida State and Miami, folks, could play twice. All right, that's the reason the regular season game, if you go back to like 04, 05, 06, there were years when it was like September, like second or third week of the season. Not the case anymore. Now, again, there were folks that game and just a couple of others that no matter what, I'm a Michigan grad, I'm watching the Iron Bowl, whatever. You didn't even know the game was being played tomorrow. And by the way, that's not a you problem. That is mostly a Miami problem, mostly, because at least Florida State's had two undefeated seasons and a natty and a Heisman, if you care about that, in the last decade. Miami, not as much. Now, here's the kick in the pants for Florida State. Because all that's big picture. As far as on field, I just said, hey, do we know that the game's being played tomorrow? The onsite engineer, Adam, just looked at me and was like, I didn't know. He's as big a college. He's like, I didn't know. Did you also not know? Are y'all aware if Miami wins tomorrow, it'll be five straight in the series? That hadn't happened in 20 years almost. Are you further aware that if Miami, because Miami has not been really good lately, if Miami wins tomorrow, it's not just five straight in the series. Tyler Van Dyke would become the fifth different quarterback to beat Florida State in the last 5 years. Malik Rozier, Nakosi Perry, Jaron Williams, De'Arik King, and Tyler Van Dyke. Folks, those quarterbacks aren't supposed to beat you five straight years. That's what's going on. One sideline, the other sideline, if Gibbons and Johnson can go on the offensive line. And if you don't know, the spread right now, Miami's 2.5-point pick. Total is 16 a hook. If a couple of the offensive linemen for FSU that are at least questionable, if they can go, FSU's got as good a chance, and that line is probably spot on. It's in Tallahassee, but the line's probably spot on because Miami's playing pretty good. If they can't go, I like Miami in the under probably a lot. So that's what you're looking at. And it could be five in a row. And, again, it's not like it's been Testaverde, Steve Walsh. It's been Malik Rozier and Nakosi Perry. Five different quarterbacks beating you in 5 years. That is what is tomorrow. Dan, what's up?
Not much. You know, I got to say that, I saw a quote today from Nick Saban about Bill O'Brien. And I know that people have their perceptions of Bill O'Brien. I think that a lot of the way that Nick Saban is carrying himself this season, Chuck, is a result of the 2010 season. Here's what I mean. In 2010, all of the expectations in the world, everybody's back. Greg McElroy, Mark Ingram, Julio Jones, everybody, they're back. You're going to have a hell of a season. By their standards, they did not have a very good season. And, of course, people were very upset, and they said, yep, that's why you can't count on everybody being back to automatically mean you're going to be good. In this case, with Nick Saban this year, I think the reason why you're seeing Zen Saban this season is what I want to call him, is because he says, you're not good enough, not just yet. And that's really unfair for me to put that on you.
It really is a new message from him. It absolutely is. All right, we're going to take a break, come back with hour two next.